The group is definitely intent on both inspiring and coordinating attacks in Europe and North America.
Hi, I'm Anna Krane. I'm the research manager at Tech Against Terrorism, an organization that supports the global tech sector to tackle terrorist and violent extremist use of the internet whilst respecting human rights. Welcome back to another episode of our podcast. This week, we're discussing ISK, short for Islamic State Khorasan Province, a regional affiliate of the terrorist organization Islamic State, primarily active in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Founded in 2015, ISK has gained notoriety for its high-profile attacks, including mass casualty suicide bombings and targeted assassinations. The most notable of these was a suicide bombing at Kabul Airport during the withdrawal in August 2021, which killed 170 Afghans and 13 US service members. The group adopts a hardline Salafi jihadi ideology and aims to establish Sharia law in the Khorasan region, which encompasses parts of modern-day Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, and Central Asia. ISK has faced opposition from Afghan security forces, international coalition troops, and Taliban fighters, as it seeks to carve out its own territory in an already complex and volatile security landscape. While ISK has suffered setbacks due to a crackdown by the Taliban, including the death of key leaders and territorial losses, it remains a persistent and concerning threat in the region and beyond. Joining us today are two members of the Tech Against Terrorism Open Source Intelligence, or OSINT, team. Arthur Bradley, the OSINT manager with a background in security intelligence and a specific focus on terrorist propaganda, and Louise Malloy, an OSINT analyst who has previously worked for the EU Commission and NATO on security policy, as well as in the private sector as an intel analyst. I started by asking Louise about ISK's origins and the areas in which they operate.
The group was officially founded in January 2015 when the IS core leadership started a second wave of expansion outside the Levant, as IS was losing a lot of territory in Iraq and Syria. It has increasingly turned to Afghanistan in an attempt to project strength. And originally, ISK's ranks were made of a large contingent of Pakistani fighters, active mostly in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And interestingly, a significant number of fighters disillusioned with the nationalist agendas of existing terrorist groups in the region, who defected from, for instance, from the Pakistani Taliban, also known as Tehrik-e-Taliban-Pakistan, TTP, from Lashkar-e-Taiba, LET, and from the Afghan Taliban. And it's important to note that ISK's hardline Salafi ideology and global agenda has always very well resonated among non-Afghan terrorists and violent extremist groups. And this is particularly, we can expect that this is particularly likely now that the Pashtun ethno-nationalist agenda of the Taliban, as well as the recent Taliban house raids against Sunni communities suspected of supporting the ISK in Afghanistan, may further alienate those communities and encourage greater support in favor of ISK, notably from Tajik and Uzbek nationals, who constitute two regional communities specifically targeted by ISK recruitment and propaganda efforts. So ISK, historic stronghold, as I was mentioning before, is situated in the bordering region between Afghanistan and Pakistan, particularly in Nangarhar, around the city of Jalalabad. And since its creation in 2015, the group has been largely focused on fighting the Taliban, as well as the Afghan security forces and the coalition forces when they were still present in Afghanistan until August 2021. And after suffering heavy losses inflicted by both coalition forces and the Taliban in late 2019, which led to the group's operational decline, ISK showed really a great ability to rebound, great resilience, and it managed very quickly to replace manpower through targeted recruitment efforts inside and outside Afghanistan to rebuild its core command and clandestine cells and quickly increase its operational tempo, particularly in and around Afghan cities, including the Kabul area. So today it's estimated that ISK has between 1,000 and 6,000 fighters, half of them being foreign terrorist fighters. And as it stands now, ISK constitute the most significant threat to the Taliban and the civilian population. The group has been responsible for growing number of high-profile attacks, particularly deadly among civilians, highly likely in an effort to undermine the Taliban's authority and ability to provide security and stability in Afghanistan.
It has been just over 2 years since the withdrawal of the US and coalition forces from Afghanistan and the takeover of the Taliban government. Louise tells me that this has had a significant impact on the ability of ISK to operate in the country.
ISK is at the moment assessed to enjoy greater freedom of maneuver under the Taliban than before the withdrawal of international troops. And data is showing that ISK attacks, propaganda outputs, and recruitment operations in the region have significantly expanded in scope. So experts are concerned that as ISK is reasserting itself in Afghanistan, the group may have the potential to threaten stability and security in Afghanistan and the wider region, in Central and South Asian neighboring countries, but also to pose a terrorism threat to the West. Since its formation in 2015, the group has been driven by both a regional and international agenda, with this idea of establishing a global and transnational caliphate. And recently, over the past month, several intelligence reports have shed lights on the high threat posed by the group, and notably its potential to plot and direct complex external operations against Western targets in the near term. So at the moment, ISK is indeed assessed not only by Western and regional counterterrorism experts, but also internally by IS core leadership itself as the highest performing affiliate among all other IS branches when it comes to delivering on both strategic and operational objectives. And this is notably evidenced by several elements, like, for instance, the group's ability to strike across the region, notably in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Pakistan, as seen with the latest, which was actually one of the most the deadliest attack perpetrated by the group since its formation, just last July in the Pakistani district of Bojor, which killed more than 100 people, Bojor being a stronghold of the Pakistani Taliban. Second element, the level of financial flows currently allocated to ISIS-K by IS core leadership at a time when all IS branches are basically required to become more financially independent from the core and to diversify their source of funding. And finally, the central and prominent role also played by ISK propaganda within the broader IS online media ecosystem, notably in terms of volume of outputs and also language coverage.
With ISK gaining a stronger foothold and operational capacity in Afghanistan, I asked Arthur how this might affect its ability to threaten the West.
So the group is definitely intent on both inspiring and coordinating attacks in Europe and North America. So it definitely has the capacity and intent to recruit and radicalize individuals based in these countries, even if it doesn't involve a direct coordination link to ISK. In terms of its capability, the group's primary presence in Afghanistan is likely to have provided it with opportunities to access external resources and facilitation networks, and as a result, you know, increasing its ability to effectively project a threat towards the West. And whilst it's true that the frequency of its attacks in Afghanistan has declined since the Taliban takeover, this is less true with regards to the pace of its attacks and plots abroad, potentially suggesting that the Taliban are prioritizing their domestic CT efforts over international ones. And it's also true that a likely lack of intelligence sharing and coordination between the Taliban and Western governments is probably not helping this. But there have been a few recent US government intelligence assessments that kind of back the concerns of an ISK threat to the West. So in March 2023, a US CENTCOM commander estimated that ISK may be able to conduct external operations against Western or US interests abroad in under 6 months with, I quote, little to no warning, should the group prioritize these kind of attacks. Likewise, a leaked Pentagon assessment obtained by the Washington Post in April of this year kind of confirmed this assessment. But to be frank, low sophistication attacks, which have generally been the tactics of IS-inspired or coordinated attacks in the West in recent years, are quite difficult to counter. You know, it's quite easy to get hold of knives or vehicles, for example. The pace of these has declined in general in Europe and North America in recent years, but clearly the persistence of plots shows that the threat definitely remains.
For the past year, ISK has significantly increased the volume and frequency of its online propaganda operations under the coordination of the Al-Azaim Foundation for Media Production, its primary media arm. Arthur delved deeper into ISK's propaganda apparatus and activities online.
It's first important to understand how the online ecosystem of IS propaganda works, which is really initially centralized. All official propaganda or other messaging comes via IS Central, which is likely to be based in Iraq and Syria. And that output also encompasses its so-called provinces around the world in places like Lake Chad, the Sahel, Somalia, Pakistan, Philippines, Mozambique, and the DRC, as well as ISK in Afghanistan. So it's likely that the way that this works is the media operatives in the provinces send their content to IS in Iraq and Syria, who then produce it and post it online. Currently, unlike in kind of earlier years at the peak of IS, the official output is pretty much exclusively in Arabic, which probably limits the potential audience. Supporter networks online play the role of translating this for an international audience. But some of these provinces also produce their own material independently of IS Central. And ISK is probably the most prolific in this area. As Louise said, it has among probably the most consistent and dynamic multilingual propaganda apparatus compared to other official IS affiliates globally. So its independent production of material includes multiple propaganda units or outlets, producing a pretty wide array and volume of magazines, books, videos, audio statements, infographics, and other types of material. As I say, it's also very multilingual, so it produces material in languages including Arabic, English, Farsi, Pashto, Tajik, Urdu, and others. And the target of this material in terms of narratives has been entirely global too, including surrounding countries around Afghanistan, but also those further afield in the Middle East, in Europe, in North America, and also in China. We can distinguish here between IS Central's kind of official output, which kind of comprises material from IS Khorasan. The group also plays the role of amplifying and translating content from IS Central. It produces its own original material via its own outlets, as I said before, and it has also kind of participated in partnerships with other pro-IS outlets. So out there online are, you know, tens or potentially even hundreds of kind of branded pro-IS media outlets that are playing the role of amplifying, you know, further spreading and translating official IS output. Generally with ISK, its dissemination is decentralized. Unlike IS Central, which posts all this content generally from kind of one official source, ISK has a network of at least 9 outlets kind of operating independently of one another online. Its propaganda is spread across a range of platforms similar to the ones used by IS Central and its other affiliates. So messaging apps with varying degrees of encryption, archiving services, file sharing platforms are the kind of places where it's kind of most active. I'd say its multilingual propaganda output is also a reflection of the geographic location of the propagandists. RUSI research has shown that a growing number of ISK propagandists are actually operating from inside Europe and other locations outside of Afghanistan. The absence of any Taliban relationship, as I said earlier, with Western law enforcement and intelligence agency is likely to have further kind of facilitated this transfer of propaganda activities in Europe.
And what kind of narratives are being promoted by ISK in its propaganda? I asked Louise to explain.
The group advances several key narratives in its propaganda for the particular purpose of discrediting the Taliban's legitimacy and also to formulate threats against particular neighbors in Central and South Asia. Since the Taliban takeover, ISK has also boosted its anti-China propaganda. As seen, for instance, in the latest issue of Voice of Khorasan, Chinese interests and notably construction projects, both in Afghanistan and in northern Pakistan, have been subjected to direct threats from the group, as notably ISIS-K is really trying with those threats to showcase China's oppression against Uyghur communities in the Chinese province of Xinjiang, and the latest high-profile attacks perpetrated by the group against a hotel in Kabul frequented by Chinese nationals was highly likely aimed at compromising any future infrastructure projects in Afghanistan. And also, ISIS-K, since again the Taliban takeover, has been also increasing its production of propaganda focused on India, heavily criticizing the Taliban engagement with the Indian government. And as we've seen very recently, the group also continues its sectarian campaign of attacks and suicide bombings against Hindu and Sikh communities.
Given ISK's sizable international network, I hope to gain some insight into the channels through which ISK obtains funds. Louise explained that there are several sources, from fixed payments by IS Corps to overseas donors.
ISK primarily raises funds through a combination of local donations, taxations of natural resources, extortion also of local populations and businessmen, and financial support from IS Corps leadership. Again, it's very true that ISK operates like relatively independently, like in Afghanistan and the wider region. But obviously, those financial flows coming from the core comes, I would say, with a bit of strings attached, and particularly when it comes to like strategic objectives and operations, external operations, possibly targeting the West. And despite calls to become more independent from the core, ISK stands as a favorite child, being the first recipient of IS Corps reserves. So to facilitate such international money transfers and store such funds, ISK relies on a significant network of hawalas, informal money brokers, who operate in major cities such as Kabul and Jalalabad in the east. Another substantial part of ISK financing almost certainly comes from donors located in the Gulf, in the Arabian Peninsula. However, since IS Corps support is unlikely to be sustained on the long term due to operational degradation, the group will have to diversify its revenue streams to become more self-sufficient. And in that, it's likely that the recent upsurge in ISK English facing propaganda output may be aimed at attracting the interest of new international donors, as well as recruiting new followers in Western target countries. Another interesting also experimentation to note when it comes to finance is the emergence of donations made to ISK in cryptocurrencies, being Bitcoins or Ethereum, which were here again confirms that ISK's ability to adapt quickly and exploit new technologies.
So what might ISK's future trajectory look like? I asked Louise to provide a forward-looking assessment.
It's likely that ISK will continue, obviously, to focus resources on mass casualty attacks in urban areas in this effort to undermine confidence in the Taliban's ability to project and provide security and stability. The group also will certainly continue efforts to expand operations across the region through direct cross-border attacks in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, or Pakistan, and also by dedicating a substantial volume of its propaganda output at Central and South Asian populations to attract donors and recruit new affiliates. However, the Taliban pressure on the group at the moment is likely to constrain ISIS-K's ability to plot and direct complex external operations in the near term, which might make the group more likely to primarily focus on accessible regional targets. However, in the event that the Taliban fail to address the threat posed by the group in the longer term, ISIS-K is really likely to continue to grow stronger, expand its operations, and further strengthen its ability to plan, finance, and carry out attacks externally, including in Europe. And notably, thanks to a growing English language propaganda output, which may help attract international recruits and funding and also inspire radicalized individuals to conduct low sophistication attacks in the West.
How can tech companies better tackle ISK propaganda online, and what steps can the international community take to counter the group's offline activities?
In terms of its of disrupting its online activities, I'd say, first of all, it's really important that there is information sharing between tech platforms regarding the finer details of the group's online presence. As Louise was saying earlier, a lot of its output is not obviously terrorist content. And in fact, this is quite a common theme. I think there's probably this kind of idea among a lot of people that terrorist content is just graphic, obviously really horrific stuff, but actually the large proportion of it is not clearly obviously terrorist content. And that makes it very difficult for tech company moderators without, you know, minute understanding of the details of terrorist content to be able to identify it and action it in line with their policies or the law. So from our point of view, as an NGO operating in the space, priority is really to build constructive working relationships with the platforms that are most heavily exploited. And rather than publicly shaming them, we work to assist them with identifying and disrupting the online activities of groups like ISK. Ultimately, the objective is to apply sufficient friction to the group's efforts to recruit and intimidate online and consistently make the internet a difficult place for groups like ISK to operate. In terms of countering its kind of offline activities with ISK, this is, I'd say, it's a really difficult one internationally. Ultimately, this would need to involve closer communication and collaboration with the Taliban, and therefore a move closer towards recognition of the group as a legitimate government. At least in the UK, there doesn't appear to be much political appetite for this. As an example, Tobias Elwood, who's a senior Conservative MP in the UK, was pretty heavily criticised for his positive comments about the Taliban following a trip to Afghanistan earlier this year. So there's a difficult decision to be made here in terms of ISK. We could potentially improve public safety whilst legitimising a repressive and misogynistic government, or continue condemning the Taliban for its human rights violations against the Afghan people.
Thank you to our guests, Arthur and Louise, for their input in today's episode. You can find Tech Against Terrorism's report on the threat posed by ISK in the show notes. If you want to learn more about Tech Against Terrorism and our work, visit techagainstterrorism.org or follow us on Twitter at Tech versus Terrorism. I'm Anna Krane. This is the Tech Against Terrorism podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a brand new episode. And if you enjoy listening, please rate, leave a review and share the episode, as that really helps new people find us. This is an OG podcast production. Executive producer is Archie McFarlane. Produced by Adrian Dangor. Edit and sound design by Ollie Guillou. Music by Rowan Bishop.